I once asked a friend of mine from Tennessee to summarize Jesus in the gospel for me. And he smiled in that wonderful southern drawl. He said, "Either you're for him or you're agin him." And that is exactly where we find ourselves in Acts chapter 14. We are in the midst of the first missionary journey. But this statement is true, not only in this passage, but in all the others. Either you're for him or you're agin him. And here is the reading from Acts chapter 14, verses 1 through 7 from the English Standard Version. "Now at Iconium, they entered together into the Jewish synagogue and spoke in such a way that a great number of both Jews and Greeks believed. But the unbelieving Jews stirred up the Gentiles, poisoning their minds against the brothers. So they remained for a long time, speaking boldly for the Lord, who bore witness to the word of his grace, granting signs and wonders to be done by their hands. But the people of the city were divided. Some sided with the Jews, and some with the apostles. When an attempt was made by both Gentiles and Jews with their rulers to mistreat them and to stone them, they learned of it and fled to Lystra and Derbe, cities of Lycaonia, and to the surrounding country. And there they continued to preach the gospel." When I was in fifth grade, I had a Sunday school teacher. His name was Mr. Smith. We would meet in this upper room, second story, a very cold building, 62 degrees every single time. Mr. Smith was no seminarian. He was a self-taught man. And he would come and share with us about Jesus. And he was so excited about Jesus and spoke so fast that the saliva in his mouth would form these strings between his lips. Have you ever seen that before? And this was something that happened every single Sunday. This was nothing new to us. It was just something that we assumed would be because he was so excited about Jesus. And I remember how much he cared for us. I remember one particular instance, a party that we went to his house. I lived in upstate New York in Syracuse. We get lots of snow and we had a sledding party. And then afterwards we went into his home and we made ice cream. I know it sounds dumb, but we made ice cream and that sugary, salty sweetness was marvelous and it warmed us up all getting a chance to turn the crank. But Mr. Smith always came to church alone because his wife was not a believer. And I remember that specifically, that day when we were at his house. You could feel the tension in the room. Well, Mr. Smith and I never really talked about it. We actually carried on conversations even after I was married and had children. We never talked about it because we didn't need to. My mom was a beautiful believer, still is a beautiful believer, and my dad was not. So coming from a divided home, we understood each other. That you're either for him or you're against him. And that's exactly the crux of this passage in chapter 14, verse 4. "But the people of the city were divided." This word divided gives us our word schism. It means cut right down the middle. It means there's no fence. There is a dividing line and there are two sides and that's it. Now, of course, this reminds me of all of the passages throughout Genesis to Revelation that talk about this. You have the two roads, really, that start in Genesis chapter 4 with Cain and Abel. Cain versus Abel. Abel is jealous of his brother Abel, and so he kills him. And God establishes that particular event as the crossroads, the crux, the schism that people will see in their lives and in their cultures and in their cities from that time on. Think of all of the preaching that's been done here about the book of Exodus, the difference between worshiping and serving Pharaoh or Yahweh. Those are your two choices. There's no middle road. There's either this way or that way. You're either for him or you're against him, and that's it. Think about what Joshua said in Joshua chapter 24. He was very clear. You have two choices, but I choose this day to serve God. And then that famous story out of the First Testament, 1 Kings chapter 18. Remember the prophets of Baal? And I think about that wonderful statement that Elijah makes. Either Yahweh is God or Baal is God, but both cannot be at the same time. You have one of two choices. As I've been teaching throughout the years and trying to help people to understand this, I've filled whiteboards, 4 by 8 foot whiteboards, with all kinds of writing and then erase it and then start all over again. And one of the diagrams that I will draw is a circle. I will just draw one circle and then I'll draw a slash line, a dividing line. And then I'll draw numerous other circles. And I will point my students to John chapter 14, where Jesus makes that famous claim, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father except through me." It's a marvelous statement. But Jesus is laying down the gauntlet. He's setting up the schism. He's put the crux right in the middle of the road. And he says, look, it's my way or the highway. It's this way or all the other ways. You can choose all the other ways. But my way is totally different. Now, we should not be surprised by this, of course, that Jesus was actually the one who told us this. If you look up any of the references in your program about this, you can see this over and over and over again. Jesus said to the people, they don't hate you, they hate me. They hated me first before they hated you. Now, think about this. We're in Acts chapter 14, but up to this point, we have had an awful lot of dividing line schism, a lot of hatred going from one side to the other. Listen to this list. Acts chapter 4, there were threats against the disciples. Acts chapter 5, there were beatings. Acts chapter 7, there was the stoning of Stephen. Acts chapter 8, there was widespread arrest and persecution, a la Saul before he became Paul. And then there was the plot to kill Paul once he became Paul in Acts chapter 9. Acts chapter 12, James is killed in prison. Peter is imprisoned. Acts chapter 13, which we have spent a few weeks now understanding, there is mobs who have been incited to riots and violence, and Christians are driven from the city. And then we have this passage in Acts chapter 14, where there was a plot to harm Paul and Barnabas. And in fact, later on, we're going to see in this chapter in weeks to come that Paul is actually stoned, the very thing that was threatened against him in our passage this morning. Now, nothing has changed. I mean, we think that somehow this is the worst time in human history, and isn't this awful, and things haven't ever been this bad before. Oh, come on, man. Things have always been like this. Think about what Jesus said. Let me read his words to us this morning. This is a passage that doesn't get mentioned much when we talk about Christianity. But here it is, Matthew chapter 10, verse 34. "Don't think that I've come to bring peace to the earth. I've not come to bring peace, but a sword." This is Jesus speaking. "For I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a person's enemies will be those of their own household." Don't be surprised by what happened to Mr. Smith. Don't be surprised by my own upbringing. Don't be surprised by the events of perhaps your own homes. Because this is exactly what Jesus said. The gospel divides people. The city was divided, Acts 14:4. There was a schism. Now, why is this? I mean, we really have to stop to consider this because it seems so abnormal to us. This is the very first missionary journey. Here we are. We have our Bibles that we read every week. We hear preaching every week. We sing hymns every week. I mean, this is something we do all the time, right? But this was very new in Acts chapter 14. This is a brand new message. People are hearing this for the very first time. Think about what this meant to those folks. Think about the lightning bolt across the sky that this would have meant in their thinking, in their minds. This is how new it must have been. Imagine a biologist finding a brand new species of mammal. Imagine a physicist who finds a brand new renewable source for free energy. Imagine that. Imagine a doctor who finds a cure for cancer. That's how amazing this story was in Acts chapter 14. This was brand new. New stuff. Or as the famous character in Princess Bride said, "This is inconceivable." But imagine now, if you were whalers in the 19th century, and you were about to lose your job as a whaler because there was something new along the horizon called electricity. Imagine yourself being somebody who was a Pony Express rider who was about to lose his job to the telegraph system. Or perhaps those who were into the horse and buggies who lost their jobs to steam engines. Or to AOL, who lost their supremacy on the internet to Google because Google had a better search engine. Now think of the Jews. Imagine that you had everyone's ear. Everybody listened to you. They wanted your perspective. They wanted your knowledge. They wanted your words. They wanted you. They honored you. They praised you. They lauded you. They followed you. It was all about you. And now there's a new voice in town. And somebody else's name is up in lights. And they start to peel off and follow this new guy who has this new voice. And they're taking your power and your money and your followers, but they're taking your power. You're losing your power, and that's the key. You see, people don't want to lose their power. Let's just be straight up honest about that. We see this beginning in chapter 13. If we look at this whole thing, this whole first missionary journey in the context, there's this incitement that goes on in chapter 13, verses 45 and 50. And this incitement is because the Jews were about to lose their position, their power. They don't want to lose it. And this incitement continues all the way through the book of Acts now. You notice it in chapter 14 and verse 19. You'll see it again in chapter 17, chapter 18. Think about this. Think about every time you watch the news or go to the internet to pull up your favorite news source. And ask yourself the question, when is it that you see a political story? Why am I seeing this story now? What is the point of this particular story? Who's benefiting from the headline? Who's telling this particular story? There is really nothing different between what we see in journalism today and what we're seeing in the text of Acts. Because we see it in politics, we see it in religion, we see it in culture, because it's pure human nature. We want to be in control. We want to have the power. We want, we want, we want. And that is the crux of Acts 14. You're either for him or you're against him. Now, you've probably watched enough television and movie to know that there's one famous phrase that comes out of movies and television. My friend is the enemy of my enemy. If you can find somebody else to pony up alongside of you who's about to lose their power too, and find in them somebody with whom you can actually kind of sidle alongside of, boy, that's a good thing. Because now you don't have to go it alone. And so that's exactly what we find here. If you looked up all of the passages of Scripture that are listed there in your program, in each one of these, you would find the same thing. The Pharisees are linking up with the Herodians. Now, this is really unusual. The Pharisees, they're these really closed-off, separatist kind of folk who really think that their way is the only way. The Herodians are trying to get along with Rome, and they want all the power and political prestige that they can possibly get. And so you got these Pharisees who are really, really focused on separation in their religion. Don't want to talk to anybody who all of a sudden are going to find a friend in the enemy of their enemy, Jesus. We shouldn't be surprised at this. We find it throughout the Scriptures. So they say to one another, so you hate Jesus? Yeah, so do we. All right, let's get together and see how we can kill him. All the way through the Gospels, nothing has changed. And so we see these two groups lining up with each other. We see the Jews and the Gentiles all the way through this particular passage, and you will see it all the way through the rest of the Scriptures. The emphasis is that the Jews and the Gentiles did not often work together. It's kind of like the Pharisees and the Herodians. You got the religious leaders and the political leaders, and nary their ways shall connect. But when you got an enemy, a mutual enemy, then boy, we are all about that. So the Jews thought that the Gentiles were lower class, and the Gentiles never really got the Jews because they had all these weird laws. But all of a sudden, they're connected. And the leaders and the rulers of their particular groups are all connected because they have one enemy, and that's Jesus. Because you're either for him or you're against him. But what happens now to this is that the gospel message does something else. It creates obedience and disobedience. In fact, in chapter 14 and verse 1, this word believed and then this other word refused to believe is really better understood as obedient and disobedient. It's obeying that Jesus is Lord or disobeying that Jesus is Lord. In fact, if you go back to the context in 13, chapter 13, verses 46 and 48, you see a great example of this great tension that we find throughout all of life, and that is that you had one group of people who refused to acknowledge Jesus and eternal life, and another group of people who were glad to have the opportunity to be appointed to eternal life, and they believed. Belief and disbelief. Obedience versus disobedience. That's all it is. Either you believe, you obey, or you disbelieve and you disobey. I was listening to a colleague of mine just last month teach on an apologetic lecture, actually, on Friedrich Nietzsche. I promise not to say that word any longer. In this particular presentation, there was a man who spoke up who was obviously not a believer. And after the presentation was over, he sat right behind me, and so Tom and I had this long conversation. And I asked him question after question after question. And all of my questions were focused on the one thing, and the one thing was, how do you see the Christian view of life and things different from everybody else's view? And his point was that he wanted to say that everything was all the same, that everybody's beliefs were all the same. And I kept bringing up roadblocks of showing this is quite different from Buddhism, and this is quite different than Taoism, and this is quite different from Judaism. And we kept going through the list. And he refused. Consistently, all the way down the line, every single time, refused to acknowledge that there was anything different about Jesus. Because either you're for him or you're against him. Now, you think that this kind of thing happens just in big places where there's lots of folks. But that's not necessarily the case. In fact, there were two sites where this was going on. Iconium was the upper crust of folks. Iconium was the place where they had great agriculture, they had great commerce. In fact, today, even in Turkey, it's the fourth largest city still in Turkey today. This was a place where everybody met. This was, if you were going to be anybody from anywhere, you were going to be from Iconium. This is upper crust. This is Hollywood. This is L.A. This is New York City. And then there's the rest of us in the flyover states, you know. Hickville. Or take it this way. Imagine yourself living in Indianapolis, as we do, and take a trip 50 and then 90 miles down south on 65 going toward Louisville. On your way, you're going to pass an awful lot of farm country, aren't you? Yeah. Guess what you're going to find? The same thing that's true in Indianapolis is going to be the same thing that's true in farm country. The same thing was true in Iconium is the same thing that's going to be true in Derby and Lystra, who were the farm community, Hickville places of that particular time, about 50 or 90 miles from Iconium. You see, some folks think, oh, things are really bad in the city. Well, guess what? They're bad in the country, too. Oh, things are bad in Africa. Guess what? They're bad in America, too. Oh, things are bad down south. Oh, yeah? Well, us northerners got a problem or two. Oh, man, the poor. Really? The rich got problems, too. And what are all the problems? The problems originate in the gospel. The gospel message is going to say the same thing every single time. And that message is, either you're for Jesus or you're against him. And that's it. Because there can only be two responses. Think about this. Just this past week or two, we have heard over and over and over again that there was a song that was done for an independent film that was up for an Academy Award that was sung by none other than Johnny Erickson Tada, that wonderful, wonderful Christian lady who has been for many, many years, a quadriplegic, of course, doing Johnny and Friends and reaching out to many people who have disabilities. She sang the song. Well, as soon as the powers that be in Hollywood got word that this was a Christian song, there was all kinds of slander against the song. And in fact, now the song has been pulled from the Academy Awards. Imagine that. That people would be upset by some kind of a Christian message. Just imagine that. Well, we shouldn't be too surprised by this. In fact, the three words that are listed there in your program, slander, sedition, and stoning, is exactly what's going on here. The word slander actually comes to us, the Greek word there is kaku, which gives us this word cuckoo. It's exactly where we get that word from. You're stupid. You're ignorant. How in the world can you believe this message? You're cuckoo. And then there's slander, which simply means they were insulted and humiliated at every pass. And then, of course, as we read through the passage, we find that there was an attempt to stone them. In other words, they wanted to kill them. We shouldn't be surprised at this either. In 2008, there was a film made called Rambo. Now, before you get all excited one way or the other about this movie, Sylvester Stallone has actually come out and said that he's a Christian, and that the reason why he made this particular movie was to support the Karen tribe in what was once Burma, now Myanmar, who are Christians. Because the whole movie is about these missionaries who go in to try to do good things in this place, and they, of course, need Rambo to come and save them. But if you were caught in 2008 with a copy of this movie in Myanmar, you would be killed. We shouldn't be surprised at this, of course. This is exactly what's going to happen in the rest of Acts chapter 14, but it certainly is something that could have happened here. They were setting them up to be stoned. They heard about this, fled to Derbe and Lystra. So how did they respond to this? The response was, as I've suggested here in the program, speaking, signing, and sustaining. What I mean by that is something like Richard Baxter once said. Richard Baxter was a famous Puritan preacher. And this is his comment. I preach as never sure to preach again, as a dying man to dying men. So when you're reading all of these statements, they spoke so effectively. They spoke boldly for the Lord. There was a reliance upon the Lord. The Lord confirmed His message of His grace. He enabled them to do signs and wonders. All of these things were exactly what Richard Baxter was about. I preach as a dying man to save dying men. We shouldn't be surprised by any of this, that there are two groups, two sites, two responses to this message that was brand new. So what are applications to all of this for us? Let me just say at the outset, the gospel divides, and we shouldn't. It is not our responsibility to practice, produce, or promote separation or division of any kind, politically, socially, culturally, musically, cinematically, or in any way. Our responsibility is to preach the gospel, period. If anybody's going to hate us, they're going to hate us for that, not for other social, cultural issues. So the first thing that I suggest here is don't blame me, blame Jesus. I cannot tell you how many times I've had plain conversations, sitting in a seat next to another person who wants so desperately to believe the message of Jesus that He wants us to love our neighbors. And I emphasize to them that you can't have love your neighbor without I am the way, the truth, and the life. But they don't want I am the way, the truth, and the life. They want I love my neighbor. But you can't have one without the other. See, you can't have the sociological without the theological. The theological is I'm the way, the truth, and the life. There's only one name. We sang about it this morning. There's only one way. The dividing line is the resurrection, as Keith, well, explained to us a couple of weeks ago. This is the event that sets Christianity apart. It is the historicity of the gospel. It is a space-time event. Nothing like this has ever happened, ever. And that's the new voice in town that the Jews were afraid of. The third comment that I would make about it, this, is that we should expect persecution. There's a great movie about this. It's called Of Gods and Men. Of Gods and Men. It's the story of a group of Cistercian monks who were working in Algeria in 1996. And these monks were doing wonderful, great things, serving people, serving them food, serving medical supplies in a Muslim community. The Muslim people loved them. And they were doing good work. But of course, Islamic terrorists got a hold of this, and they knew that they were about to be killed. And one of the final scenes in the movie is this group of Cistercian monks who are sitting at a table, joyously celebrating the Lord's table for the last time. And this application. Jesus said very clearly, "Woe to you when all people speak well of you." You know, I'm one of these guys that likes people to like me. If you don't like me, I want to find out why. You know, it's a bummer when people don't like you. But I've been with lots of people who don't like me.
They don't like me because the Christian message that I preach actually affects politics, where we see political figures emptying their pockets instead of filling them because they are now going to go serve people in their communities. Or the Christian message that supremely overtakes the economics of an area, that creates wealth in an area because people are realizing that their responsibility to the gospel has freed them to new flourishing and freedom in the gospel of Jesus. Or the social setting that they might be in that's so encumbered and so intolerant. And don't you know that we live in an intolerant culture where there are a few groups that are celebrated, but if you run against those groups, you are absolutely called intolerant. And you are the ones that will be ostracized and hated. We should not be surprised at this, because Jesus said that they hated me first, and that if all people speak well about you, there's something wrong. Which brings me back to Mr. Smith. There was a dividing line that ran right through his house. He didn't make it. Jesus did. And he lived with it, as far as I know, all of his life. A very difficult setting, a very difficult situation to be in. But he knew what I knew, what you know. And that is, you're either for him or you're against him. Lord, help us to live this life in such a way that your life is the one that all see. Amen.